The History Show with Maz Duncan.
Good evening on this week's programme.
I think most people have a very positive view of James Connolly.
Ah, sure, there's a lot more icons than him.
Is James Connolly an overrated icon of Irish history? Also,
the earliest thing I have is Fianna Fáil in 1932, the leaflet of employment, and how they're going to get everybody back to work.
A look back at how political candidates have marketed themselves here since the 1930s. And Lives of the First World War, a digital project launched by the Imperial War Museum this week. And there'll be more too. But to begin, James Connolly is best known for his part in the 1913 lockout and as one of the leaders of the Easter Rising of 1916. He's widely regarded as a selfless martyr who gave his life for Irish freedom. But Connolly remains something of a controversial figure, who's also remembered as being a lousy union organiser and a very difficult character. We'll be discussing his legacy a little later, but for now, let's hear what these people had to say when Michael Lawless asked if they thought Connolly warrants such pride of place in our history.
I think James Connolly was definitely underrated.
The guy stood up for what he believed in. He stood up for ordinary people and he paid the price. My understanding is he was shot while tied to a chair. He was badly wounded during the 1916 Rising. So he was a brave man, and I mean, you don't find too many people in politics today who would do something like that.
He's no more overrated than De Valera.
I think he should be venerated, to be quite honest, because he did do fantastic work.
He gave up his life for the country, and he gave up his life for people, for working class people.
I'm not quite sure how much he has done for the Labour movement.
No, I don't think he's overrated. Perhaps he's underrated.
He should be more of an icon than he is.
No, wouldn't be overrated, no.
We could do with somebody like James Connolly today, maybe.
I suppose they all deserve it. That's why we're here.
Well, that's positive views, largely positive views about James Connolly there. But as we'll find out later, some people seem to know actually quite little about him. But what is your view? Text us on 51551. Now, many thanks for all your emails telling the stories of your relatives who fought in World War One. Keep them coming to history@rte.ie because we want to represent as many counties as possible in our forthcoming centenary programmes. More than 30,000 Irish lives were lost in the Great War, and as you can imagine, receiving a letter like this was every mother's dread.
Dear Mrs. O'Callaghan, my heart goes out to you in deepest sympathy in the death from wounds of your poor brave boy Patrick. Unfortunately, he was admitted in a dying condition during the night and died almost immediately. But thank God, it is more than likely that he received the sacraments either before being wounded or on the way down at the first dressing station. I buried him today in the quiet little cemetery at Warley, amidst many of his brave comrades, and a little wooden cross marks his grave. Yours in deepest sympathy, Reverend F. J. Kerrigan, Roman Catholic Chaplain to the Forces.
That was Noel Wade reading that letter, which reflected the fate of countless young men during the war years 1914 to 1918. This week in London, the Imperial War Museum launched their Lives of the First World War, a huge project which aims to build a digital memorial to the men and women who served in the Great War. And we will be talking to Luke Smith. We are about, in fact, to talk to Luke Smith about that now. Luke Smith is the Imperial War Museum's digital lead on this project, and he joins me now. Luke, good evening to you. How are you?
I'm very well, Miles.
Excellent.
Good to be here.
Now, the records of more than 4.5 million men and 40,000 women have already been uploaded to this site. What sort of information can people find on your website about their ancestors?
Yes, so this is day 7 of a massive project. We went live on Monday. And, you know, our aim is to tell the stories of more than 8 million men and women who served Britain and the Commonwealth during the First World War. So thus far, you know, we haven't got all 8 million. We've only got 4.5 million. So what we started with is all the people who served overseas with the British Army. And that comes from a list called the Medal Index Cards. Now, typically, that's pretty basic information. I mean, I know that you've been in there and you've looked up J.P. O'Reilly, your granduncle, and there was fairly basic information about his military service, name, that kind of thing. And we need everyone basically to get involved and come along and start piecing together the stories and adding to it, you know, based on information they have at home. Maybe they've got a photograph, or maybe they've got a story that's been handed down through the generations, or maybe they can dig in the official records and, you know, and add some evidence and add some facts from that evidence.
Interestingly, you're also including the records of conscientious objectors, 17,000 of them.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there was no conscientious objectors in Ireland because they didn't bring conscription in, although, you know, they nearly did. It's estimated, you know, there is no accurate count of conscientious objectors, but we've been working with an academic who's been researching this for about a decade, a guy called Cyril Pierce, and he has compiled a database of just over 17,000. That's by far the most complete list. And so, you know, we want to include all those who served or were called to serve.
Now, the idea is that each person in the archive, each of these names, and there could be, as you say, as many as 8 million of them by the time you finish, will have essentially their own web page, won't they?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, there's a page there, you know, there's already, you know, well over 4.5 million pages there. And it starts off very basic, you know, with the basic military information. It depends on where the original information came from. You know, when we had the conscientious objectors, actually, there's a lot of information about them, you know, their military tribunals, what prisons they're in. When we add, we're going to be adding 670,000 Canadians soon. There's more information about them, where they enlisted, where they were born. So it depends on where the information comes from, how much is in there day one. But exactly, they all have their own page, which will grow and grow and grow throughout the centenary and beyond.
And is it not the case that people could actually put up entirely spurious information? They could choose, they could select some individual and put up whatever they wanted. That, you know, this particular person was the person who actually assassinated Archduke Franz Ferdinand. It wasn't Gavrila Princip at all. That kind of thing.
Well, I'm glad you asked that, Miles, you know, because we're a history museum, so that matters to us quite a lot. And we thought a lot about that. So the way it works, you know, is that you go to livesofthefirstworldwar.org and you find someone to remember. It might be somebody on the homepage, or you search for someone. And, you know, like you found your granduncle, I found lots of people connected with me or where I come from. And you start adding information. Now, when you add something, you have to say where that came from. So, for instance, you know, just today I was in a cafe and I was adding some information from the wonderful Irish 1911 census, which is freely available online to everyone. You know, I added where that person was born, the other people in their household, and I had to cite my source and why I thought that was the same Richard Swanton that I was talking about. Now, that information, when I add that evidence, when I cite that source, you know, a bit like an academic paper, that information, it's easy to do, but that information's there forever. So if somebody else comes along and says, well, you've got this wrong, or you're just being malicious, if you got it wrong, they can improve it. And that's, you know, that's by and large, that's what people will do. Of course, some people will be malicious, or maybe not malicious. Maybe they'll just get it really wrong, so it can't be improved. It's just wrong. In that case, they challenge it. This is simple to do through the website. And that goes to a team of moderators and we'll sort it out.
Now, you tweeted yesterday about your own interest in soldiers from Ballydehob. Explain what that interest is. And explain this notion of a community in relation to the website.
Yeah, so, you know, Ballydehob is my hometown. I was born in Bantry, but grew up in Ballydehob. But I'm not from there, you know. I mean, I am from there, but my family aren't from there. So I have no family connection going back to the First World War. What we've done is we've created this facility to create a community on Lives of the First World War. It's basically a group of historic people that you're interested in. And that could be for any reason. You know, there's lots of communities there about war memorials or schools or villages. But you could have a community, you know, based on an unusual surname or, you know, people with red hair. You know, it's up to you. You curate that community. And what I want to do, I've called my community Ballydehob at War. Anyone who goes to the website now and goes beyond the homepage will see the communities link at the top, and they'll see a link through to Ballydehob at War. And I'm trying to find all the people from Ballydehob who served in the First World War. Now, I had no idea how many there would be. I started doing this. Obviously, I've been meaning to do this for a while, but I started doing this at 9:30 last night. And I did a little search, and straight away, I found 8 people. I was pretty surprised, and the reason they were easy to find is because they all died, and the information about people who died often contains their place of birth. Now, I was, you know, pretty blown away by that, and I added them all in, And I put an appeal out on Facebook on the Ballady Hob Village, you know, Facebook page. If anyone else knew any connections, could they, you know, maybe get in touch? And I thought maybe over the years they'd eventually get in touch. Already today, two people have got in touch with me with people, and I've already added one of those people, and tomorrow I'll add the rest, you know. And one of those people was not someone I knew. He just told me about his great-grandfather who served, and I've added him in there. And I decided to take one of those people and just do a bit more work on them. And I took the name Richard Swanton for a number of reasons. One, because he died age 16, you know, and so, you know, like your granduncle, he won't have any direct descendants. He didn't have any children. And so there isn't any direct descendants to remember him. And that's going to be the case for a lot of people in here. Although this is not all about people who died. About 1 in 8 people who served in the First World War died, you know.
Yeah, that was the overall, that was the average for the UK. The Irish average was a bit higher than that, I'd just like to point out. But anyways, about 1 in 6. Now, just in relation, one other interesting piece of information, by the way, I discovered, it was pointed out to me by historian Gordon Power over the weekend, that I was aware of the fact that there were existing in the National Archives here 9,000 wills of Irish soldiers who had made these wills during the course of the war and who were killed. So therefore the wills became essentially went live or became legal. And you can get a lot of information from these wills. Basically, all you have to do is go online, go to the National Archive, go to census.ie and look up soldiers' wills, and you can get them. And you could add them to this website. 51551 is our text number, by the way. It's also a useful source of information because if you have somebody who died during the Great War, up to now you've been able to go to the Commonwealth War Grave Commission website, and you've been able to do that for quite a number of years and get a decent amount of information. But it's been much more difficult to get information on anybody who survived. Here is a good opportunity to get that kind of information, isn't it, Luke?
Absolutely, and also to put it all together in one place. I mean, I want to be really clear to your listeners, by the way, about how this works. You know, it's free to go on Lives of the First World War, and it's free to search it, and it's free to become a member, and you get a dashboard, and you can remember people and add to their life stories, upload photos. That's all free. Now, there are certain genealogy records. In Ireland, you're lucky. You've got there's a lot of really amazing stuff, like those wills, which are available freely. But in other parts of the world, particularly in the UK, a lot of that stuff is always locked behind paywalls. Now, you can choose to pay and get it from us, but you do not have to. If you want to go and get it somewhere else, you can refer to it using your Find My Past subscription or whatever. So I just wanted your listeners to be really clear about how that works. And yes, one of the things which we do have is we've got a newly digitized set of service records for all the people who served the British Army. Now, when I say all the people, what happened was in the Second World War, where they were all stored, got bombed, and about 70% of them got destroyed. Now, there's still 4.6 million records there. It's quite a lot of duplication. We've got a freshly digitized set with over 600,000 records that had never previously been identified. You know, so if you're lucky, you know, for one of the guys, one of the people from Ballady Hob who I was researching, I found a service record for him. Often people who survived the war have a service record because it was to do with giving them a pension. And therefore, that it's often the case, not always, but, you know, so if you're lucky, or, you know, you may find that. There's lots of other sources, social history sources, you know, like census records and births, marriages and deaths and a whole range of other stuff, which you can sometimes get outside of our system. Like in Ireland, you know, we've got great relationship with the National Archives in Ireland, and Katrina Crow there, who did that amazing project to make the 1911 census free. That's something you can refer to and get loads of information from.
Also, it should be pointed out that websites like Ancestry.com and Find My Past, there's a findmypast.ie, findmypast.com.co.uk, etc., etc., that a lot of these are available via libraries in Ireland, that you can actually go into a library and that you can use the library facility and the library computer, and you can get access to these websites free.
Yeah, absolutely. Libraries, universities, I mean, visitors to Imperial War Museums can get access to various genealogy sources for free as well. And, you know, we'd encourage people to do that. You know, it's not anything you have to pay for on Lives of the First War is stuff which is already behind paywalls.
So you're paying for it, essentially, so that you have to pass that on to the consumer, as it were. But they don't have to, as you say, they don't have to access it that way. They can access it for free in other ways and then upload it onto your site.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've gone in and added lots of information about various people. You know, my own great-grandfather, William Wheeler, a fishmonger from Croydon. I found his service record and all the information that I've added about him. That's all now on his life story page. Anyone can go and see it. You don't even need to become a member. You just go in and look at it. You know, there's no paying or whatever. So it's just, you know, to be clear about how that works. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Luke, for joining us today. Luke from the Imperial War Museum in London. And it's livesofthefirstworldwar.org, www, obviously preceding that. That's the website, so you can go and have a look. And full details are on our website. You'll also find information about our project to hear about your relatives for our forthcoming programmes to commemorate World War I. People from every county signed up, and we'd like to tell their stories. Luke Smith, thank you very much for joining us. Before the break, I just want to mention a seminar that's taking place. Nothing to do with the First World War. Next Sunday at the 24th of May in the National Museum, The Vikings, New Archaeological Discoveries, involves a day of talks exploring new and exciting discoveries from the Viking Age. Full details again on our website. After the break, we'll be discussing the legacy of 1916 leader James Connolly. Is he an overrated hero? Text us with your views to 51551.
Text the history.